Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Sunday to you. Excited to be with you here. Feels like Kevin and I just got off the air on Saturday, but here we are back in better than yesterday, hopefully. Not that yesterday was bad, but we're excited to talk to you today. It's going to be a football-heavy day. I just tweeted out and let everybody know that we're going to be talking to a couple of beat reporters from the AFC East. I've teased this for a while that we're going to be doing some divisional previews. It finally lined up for today, and we're going to be talking to Ryan Talbot from the Bills and Brian Costello from the New York Post regarding the New York Jets. So we're going to get into the entire division, spend a couple of hours really doing that. We'll get into the Patriots early, the Dolphins late, and Jets and Bills in between. So excited for that. Obviously, there's other stuff going on in the sports world. Take a little bit of a backseat today to football in the first couple of hours, but we're excited to talk about it, and I'm excited to have my co-host, Kevin Walsh, here. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to get into these division previews. The AFC East, some people would probably think on the face, I mean, this isn't exciting. We know what the top is going to look like, but there are some interesting teams in here, and especially when you have two teams already that, you know, they try to get the franchise quarterback situation figured out this past draft. So all teams is an important season. The Dolphins, obviously, you know, what comes of Adam Gase, Tannehill coming off the injury. It's a very, very interesting division. I think it's a good starting point.
Yeah, so as you said, there may not be a lot of intrigue or you're not going to be sitting on the edge of your seat finding out who's going to win this division most likely, but there are some big storylines, particularly two rookie quarterbacks that were drafted. And as you said, Tannehill coming back. Some coaches here could be on the hot seat. Obviously, two of them are pretty firmly entrenched. You have to feel pretty good if you're Bill Belichick, and obviously you're going to feel good if you're Sean McDermott making the playoffs as a rookie head coach with no real expectations to do so. So I think he's in a good position, and that roster continues to be turned over. I'm excited to talk with Ryan Talbot about that. We have him on occasionally and excited to talk to him again. He'll be at 9:20, as I said, and then 9:40, and Brian Costello from the Post at 10:20. So, but in general, on this division, we talked a little bit yesterday about what the outlook was going to be. The Patriots at a minus 1500 from Vegas as a chance to make the playoffs, and nobody else with the division anywhere close to that. So, while we expect the Patriots to take down the division, what is your one thing, if I could ask you, that you're looking forward to seeing from any one of these teams?
I think as I was kind of doing my prep work for today's show and everything like that, the one thing that did feel like it stood out was Ryan Tannehill. It really did, because for the most part, I think we kind of have an idea of what we can expect from these other teams. But Tannehill is an interesting one. I mean, I remember, because, you know, we're going to get into the fantasy aspect of these teams as well throughout this show. And, you know, guys like yourself, I as well, who wait on quarterback. You typically have your eye on one or two guys. And it's not that long ago where Tannehill was one of the guys where if people were banging the drum to wait on quarterback, they were probably zoned in on Ryan Tannehill because of Jarvis Landry, Devontae Parker, Adam Gase. I think when he eventually came, I think people were excited for that. Obviously, now coming off the injury, I don't think, I mean, it's not a stretch. I think it would probably be accurate to describe Tannehill as the second best quarterback in that division. That's not an impressive crown to wear. But, I mean, how good is Ryan Tannehill? If Tannehill comes out and plays the best football of his career, then can the Dolphins surprise teams? Quite possibly so. So I think that would be, at the moment, that I think it's the thing that would cause the most intrigue. Because if Tannehill bottoms out, then the Dolphins might have to go for a full reset heading into the next offseason.
I totally agree with that initial assessment. And to give everybody a sense of where he's at currently in fantasy circles, right now is 28th ranked quarterback. So even in a 2QB league, which are often very difficult. I was in one last year, which I actually won. It was a crazy kind of league. It wasn't managed particularly well, but I ended up winning it. And I'd have to go back and see even who my two QBs were. But certainly neither of them were Ryan Tannehill, nor would they be going into this year. So he's currently ranked 28th, right behind Andy Dalton and Tyrod Taylor, right in front of Sam Bradford. And ironically, Lamar Jackson is a spot in front of Joe Flacco. So that gives you some sense of what people are thinking of him. No expectations really at all. And the Dolphins were in a tough spot, right? Because Tannehill got hurt in late 2016. They didn't do surgery. He comes out of the gate in training camp. Boom, ACL, see you later. Done for the year. And they were piecing it together from there. And 2017 was a big year for Tannehill and the Dolphins to try to assess what they had. And then they couldn't do it. And I remember talking about this with George Kurtz last summer and said that put them in an extremely difficult position because the 2017 was going to be the cut bait year on Tannehill. It was do or die for the Dolphins and him, and then they had to punt it. And by all accounts, he was a good citizen with them and was in meetings and really influential and helping the other QBs, and they thought he did a really good job, so they wanted to come back and assess him this year. He's obviously already played 5 seasons. His record in those games is 37-40, 62.7% completion percentage. His top year was 2015, 4,200 yards, 24 touchdowns, 12 picks. The previous year he had 27 touchdowns. But the interceptions has really been the issue. 13, 17, 12, 12, and 12 in his 5 seasons. So we're really going to have to see exactly what comes of this season. And I think it is, again, a do-or-die scenario for the Dolphins and Tannehill. And potentially Adam Gase. I think that's the problem that's occurred here. And I know this isn't the Dolphins preview. We'll get into it a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But this is the one thing Kevin is interested in. I do think that is going to be because Adam Gase walked in there and evaluated that locker room, decided he didn't like so many of the players that were in there, that his roster turnover has occurred over a few seasons now, and I think it could crater on them, and then he won't be there for the actual reset. Do you know what I mean? Like, are you going to let this head coach draft your next QB and work with your next QB, despite the fact that it is his reputation to work with QBs? Basically, what he has to do to save his job is get Tannehill playing great this year.
Well, let me ask you this then, because for an overview, right? Because we're just kind of just looking at the, you know, from afar for this division, and a lot of times in football we talk about that coaches are not given a long enough leash. I remember when Rex Ryan showed up in Buffalo, and I think they said he only had 1 year to make the playoffs or 2 years to make the playoffs, and he was going to be fired. It's just like, you know, that type of turnaround is too quick, and I wonder if that's something that's damned this entire division for a while. Because listen. You cannot take away from the Patriots for what they have done over almost now 2 full decades. But this division is an abomination outside of them. And it's been that way for a long time. I don't know if they've ever had 3 simultaneous good teams. And if they have, maybe it was 1 or 2 seasons. It has really, really been a difficult spot. So I think kind of to your point there, I wonder if these teams have to just stand hold at where they're at within their coaching situation. Because what you just said with Gase, I completely agree with. Something that I wrote down, just kind of prepping questions for...
Which is crazy in this sense. His first year, he's only 40 years old.
Yeah.
In his first year, in 2016, they went 10-6 and made the playoffs. And Tannehill, that's when Tannehill got hurt. Remember Matt Moore almost got decapitated against the Steelers. They lost that game. Last year, they went 6-10. But there have been rumblings that maybe he's not popular amongst the players, but it's the players that are gone that are saying that kind of stuff. So,
and to that,
who do you believe?
And to that point, honestly, as I was kind of prepping questions, I'm probably going to ask both guests, how do you feel about the job security for the Jets and the Bills? I know McDermott made the playoffs year one, just like Adam Gase did. But there were also a lot of questions, and a lot of that came with the benching of Tyrod Taylor. And if this team gets off to a poor start, maybe he ends up on the hot seat. Everybody expected that Todd Bowles was going to be losing his job last season. Kind of as the season played out, people said, okay, maybe he can, maybe they stand pat with that situation, and they did. But again, how much job security does Todd Bowles have? I think it would be surprising if all three of these coaches were let go. But the fact that all three of them would come back feels like an even further stretch. And I think that is something that perhaps has damned this division for a long time, because the Patriots have sat up top there with the same combination, obviously, of Brady and Belichick. But when you look at the rest of this division and just the constant turnover at the top, it is likely something that is added to the disarray that sits below New England.
No, I don't think there's any question about that. But to address a couple of things of what you said, McDermott's fine. Keep in mind that this ownership group is now in full control. The Pegulas are in full control. Back when Rex was hired, there was it was still a transition in ownership. So this is the general manager that's worked with McDermott down in Carolina, Brandon Burke, and McDermott. Those guys are tied at the hip. Mm-hmm. They're turning this roster over in their what they feel is an ideal player set. It's not typical. It's not optimal to have three offensive linemen leave during one offseason, but nonetheless, I think McDermott's safe. This is his GM. The owner has picked basically both of them, and I think they're good to go. But your macro point about coaching stability, I think, is always important. You take somebody like the Bengals, they dedicated themselves to coaching stability. But Marvin Lewis has been there 15 years. They've never won a playoff game.
But at least it's kept them above water for most of it, right? Like, you could make the argument.
What good is that? That's the problem. It's a huge problem in the NFL. I'm scared to lose my job. I don't want to lose this job. Or, I don't want to rock the boat because things are going pretty good here. They're better than they were in the 90s. Like, I know. One of my best friends from high school played for the Bengals in the 90s. They were awful. And the organization, from the time Boomer Esiason got them to the Super Bowl, for the next 14 years, they were one of the worst franchises. All throughout the 90s, they were terrible. Turnover in coaches. Bruce Coslett. They had David Shula. They had just a bunch of guys going through there that were awful. So that brought in Marvin Lewis. He actually did get them to the playoffs. I think it's five times. It might be six. But he had, at one point, he won the division over the Steelers and the Ravens. But he never was able to get it done with better rosters than the teams that he was losing to in the playoffs. So I use him as an example because it's not a absolute discussion. You have to be mindful of the fact that, like, yeah, we've been better than we have been, but, we can't beat the Patriots. That kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. I don't think Todd Bowles thinks of it that way. I hope McDermott doesn't think of it that way. And I think Gase has just got really his hands full in trying to turn over this roster right now. But that's a lot of it. Constantly having guys on the hot seat and all that kind of stuff, it just creates turmoil. And I understand trying to rid yourself of that, but you have to still have a measuring stick to what your franchise can do. Willy-nilly in week 16 and be like, well, if we win this in week 17, well, right. If we win this one and make the playoffs, you're safe. It's what the Bears did with Lovie Smith a few years ago, where he went 10-6, but because the Vikings had won a game on that week 17, they like bumped him out of the playoffs and they fired him the next day. It didn't make any sense.
And I think, though, right, so Marvin Lewis has been there for 15 years. Now, they've made the playoffs 7 times, and at one point it was 5 years in a row. But because they've never won a playoff game, you ask the question, okay, we need to adjust our expectations. I think to the point, though, of the AFC East, look, I agree with you. I would be surprised to see McDermott leave, and we'll get into this more again as we get into the Bills breakdown. But at the top of that schedule, if you look at that schedule for the first 8 weeks, 2 wins might be a surprise. And if a team like Buffalo is 2-6, we might start asking a lot of questions. And I think one of the things with Buffalo, if we're talking about interest, right, just question marks, is I don't know what the expectations for Buffalo are. I'm looking forward to Ryan Talbot giving us some type of idea, because I look at them from afar, and I feel like they are kind of set up to be one of the league's worst teams. But we look at some of the playoff odds, right? They're projected to be, they're comfortably ahead of where the Jets and the Dolphins are. This is a team that made the playoffs last year, as surprising as it was. They did make the playoffs. So that is something I think for Buffalo, and really for all of those three teams aside of the Patriots, is what are your expectations? Is it 8-8 or bust? Is it contend for the wild card? Is it it's okay, we're going through a rebuild? And I don't know the answer almost to all of those.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So we're going to start it off with the Patriots in the next segment, and then we'll transition to the Bills and the Jets and the Dolphins. So a lot to cover. We'll go through all the positions, their storylines, and the like. So it's Mike Blewett, Kevin Walsh. It's an AFC East Preview Sunday. We'll be back on FNTSY right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
FNTSY, it's Mike Blewett and Kevin Walsh from Fantasy Sports Today. If you want to reach out to us, please do. On Twitter at FNTSY Radio, I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at Kevin Walsh. And on the phones, if you want to give us a call at 844-843-6879, 844-844-FNTSY. So if you want to go to a 2018 World Series game, tune in all this week to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So it starts tomorrow through July 17th, as we'll be playing the DKMS Trivia Challenge for your shot to call in with a chance to attend the Fall Classic in person. The number to play is 844-843-6879. That's 844-84-FNTSY. The contest is sponsored by DKMS. They're looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer, and for many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. While 30% of patients can find a matching donor in their families, 70%, nearly 14,000 each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. So find out how you can help the cause and go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS. It's the DKMS Trivia Challenge, July 9th through 17th. Call in and win. So, Patriots, that's where we're going to start our AFC East previews. I think the first thing we should do is take a look at their schedule. We all know their divisional opponents. But they're going to be playing, it looks like the AFC South is who they have in division, and the NFC North is who they have across the aisle in the other conference. So here's how it starts for them. They start hosting Houston, then at Jacksonville, at Detroit, Miami, Indianapolis, Kansas City. All three of those games are at home. Then they go to Chicago, to Buffalo, host Green Bay, at Tennessee, at the Jets, hosting the Vikings, at Miami, at Pittsburgh, Buffalo, New York. So the real tough ones in week two, at Jacksonville, in week 15, at Pittsburgh. They got a break with the Packers and the Vikings at home, and the Chiefs as well. And I guess you could throw Houston in there as well. So when you line this up, it's just another one of these years for them where they could put up a big number, 13 wins, 14 wins.
So by the projections, and these were done back in May, but by Warren Sharp for Warren Sharp Football, and he kind of adjusts it basically using the over-under total projections of teams' wins to go based on strength of schedule. The Pats have the second easiest schedule in the league. Obviously, part of that, again, that's just by those projections. Part of that is six games against the AFC East. As you mentioned right there, some of their tougher games they do get at home. The Jacksonville game and the Pittsburgh game stand out, obviously, as two road games. I would like to throw the Tennessee Titans road game in there as well. But, yeah, sure. Again, it is a schedule that I think definitely sets up, again, for them to be successful. I mean, the thing with the Pats is home or road, how much does it even matter sometimes? In terms of for them, it's like, oh, they have to go to Pittsburgh. Yeah, they've done that a billion times. They have to go to Jacksonville. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where if they're home, it obviously is a big advantage for them. But on the road, how much does that worry you with this team? And I think that is one of the – sometimes it is difficult, I think, with the Pats because we're so positive that they're going to win the division. Again, that it sometimes is difficult to gauge how exactly good is this roster? Are if the Patriots were playing in the NFC South, would we have this same exact feeling with the overwhelming confidence? I know they wouldn't be minus 1,500 to make the playoffs, but would they still be the overwhelming favorites? Would it resemble something like the Steelers at a minus 550 if they went to an NFC South? And I think that's really the big question for the Patriots is gauging that roster relative to the rest of the league, because that's where they're at. In terms of where, you know, is next to the rest of the AFC East, we know it's significantly better.
Yeah, so let's take it position by position. I don't think we really need to discuss the quarterback.
He's good,
to be honest. But right now, from fantasy purposes, he's ranked third. According to Fantasy Pros, we'll just use that as an aggregator site for now. He's ranked third behind Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, right in front of Cam Newton, Deshaun Watson, who has slipped at least ever so slightly down the list. But Tom Brady is a top three quarterback. Can't argue it whatsoever. He obviously had another MVP-worthy season last year. And here he is again after last season. Let me just give you some offensive stats from last year. They were first in yards. They were second in overall offense for points scored. They had the most first downs, second most passing yards, average drives. They averaged the most plays per drive, the most yards per drive, the most points per drive, field position. They were 15th, which Belichick probably wasn't happy about, but scoring percentage on drives, they were first. So always extremely efficient. They just grinded down. Nothing out of the ordinary for them. Brady was 32 touchdowns, 8 picks. He threw 4,500 yards, and there you go. His QB, what was the stat that I saw this morning as I was doing this? His 96.6 passer rating under pressure was higher than the passer rating that 22 quarterbacks earned from a clean pocket. So clearly he's at his best when he's under pressure and he makes the other teams pay. So we don't really have to go deep into Brady. He's still the best quarterback in the league. If you want to name Aaron Rodgers as the best, that's fine with me too. But Brady's historical success needs no introduction. Now, what we do need to do, though, is figure out the other positions, first of which is the running back position, where there are changes made, notably with them drafting Sony Michel in the first round. Still, they have James White as the pass-catching specialist, and you have Rex Burkhead there as well, with a possibility of either Jeremy Hill or Mike Gillisley mixing in some capacity. Patriots backs have averaged a pedestrian 4.1 yards per carry over the past three seasons, but they were at 4.4 last season. They combined for a league high as a unit, a league high 9 touchdown receptions, and first with 23 touchdown receptions over the past three seasons. So that plays a little bit into the next position group they're going to go to in the wide receivers. But clearly you have another running back situation here in New England, which is likely to be a committee.
And I think the biggest question would be fantasy-wise, and perhaps just for their season as a whole, is can anybody actually pull away? And I think this would be the year, more so than the rest, that a guy would have that chance in Sony Michel, just because the fact they were willing to spend that first-round pick on him. Now, again, it can get difficult in fantasy because he can give you – they can start on the one-yard line, go down 98 yards, and then all of a sudden, you're Jeremy Hill. Here's Rex Burkhead. So the touchdown stuff can be difficult to project. I guess the biggest question would be seeing, can you look at any of these running backs and say, I think that's going to be the guy. I think there are some people that actually think it could end up being Rex Burkhead. So that I think that would probably be your biggest question in terms of how it plays out for them on the field. Actually, the committee is going to work just fine because it's worked just fine seemingly forever. As long as Rex Burkhead doesn't cut open Tom Brady's hand again, I think they'll be just fine.
Yeah, Deion Lewis last year had 800. He's departed for Tennessee, but last year he had 896 yards on 180 carries, 6 touchdowns, so 5 yards per carry. He also caught another 32 passes for another 214 yards. You got 3 more touchdowns. You got every bit of return on him with 1,100 yards from scrimmage, a 92% catch rate, and 9 overall touchdowns. Now, do you think this people are going to be eager to slot Sony Michel right into those numbers? But I would tap the brakes. I don't think necessarily he'll go all the way there. And let me see exactly where he winds up currently on these on Fantasy Pros right now. Sony Michel is 28th currently. So you're looking at a RB3 according to these rankings, but he's somebody I'd be willing to take a shot at. For this reason, the Pats did spend the first round pick on him. There are rumors of his potential long-term health, right? Remember those subterfuge rumors came up? I wouldn't be surprised if it was planted by somebody in the greater Boston area, but there are those rumors out there. They might be a little bit more eager to use him earlier in his career as opposed to let's protect this guy over the long haul. He's still a rookie, so they're not going to give him the ball 400 times, but maybe he does end up seeing by year's end a little bit of a Deion Lewis workload. So, you know, as an early RB3 risk, you're playing the zero RB game in your draft strategies. Yeah, I think it's okay to take a shot at a rookie. A lot of people are showing Royce Freeman a lot of love, and ironically, Royce Freeman currently ranked right in front of him at 27, another rookie Ronald Jones at 26. Ronald Jones probably has the easiest path to the starting job of those three, although people really love Royce Freeman to take the starting job in Denver. But I could see Sony Michel being a solid value pick there, and if you're playing the RB, zero RB game, he's somebody that you could probably see after guys like you know, your Jay Ajayi's and Derrick Henry's have gone off the board.
And then if you look at the other running backs, just with Burkhead, who's at the 38th running back currently, again, by the projections, and James White is at 50. So there is a considerable gap there, and I think that is representative of what we would expect to happen here. Because I think I would argue Sony Michel's the most talented of the bunch, and the fact that they did spend that first-round pick on him, it is difficult to trust that he ends up leading them in rushing touchdowns. In attempts, probably. I think that you would say probably. But the idea that he would lead them in touchdowns, I think, is something that is difficult to guarantee, as is always with Patriot running backs.
Yeah, so that gives you a little sense of the running back position right there. Committee, in my mind, I'm happy to take a shot on Michelle, if I'm playing zero RB, I'll also always be willing to take a shot at James White late. If I need a fourth, fifth running back, I'm happy to have him. It becomes difficult to predict exactly which weeks you could use him, but when there are injuries and you are playing a value game. We've seen the Pats lean on James White heavily at times. Could they lean on Rex Burkhead if Sony Michel goes down? Sure, but I'm willing to take a James White shot because it's late and I might be able to use him a few weeks here or there in a flex capacity because he's going to catch a few passes. So moving on to the wide receiver position there, obviously the big story is that Julian Edelman will not be there to start the season. That suspension is going to be upheld. And I don't think the Patriots weren't any really worse for wear with him out last year. Remember, he tore his ACL last August. He still needed some recovery time. He is not quite yet at a year since that injury happened. So I actually, while the four-game suspension is a blow, I think for him personally, for recovery time purposes, it should be okay. It might actually be a positive. Now, could it be a net negative because of the thing I've told you I've concerned about in the past, Kevin, with the fact that I don't think Belichick has time for stuff like this, and despite his protestations, he's still being suspended four games for PED use, and does he get put in the doghouse? He seems to have been a Belichick favorite, but is anybody really that? You would think Tom Brady is a Belichick favorite, and
he's not.
Over the course of the last 6-8 months, it seems that he may not be anymore. So there's reality. Edelman not there to start the season. You got Chris Hogan, Jordan Matthews, Cordero Patterson, Malcolm Mitchell. They drafted Braxton Berrios. Philip Dorsett is in there. And Matthew Slater also is their special teams guru. We'll see if he has still a spot on the roster, you would think. He's one of Belichick's guys. So give me your sense. What happens with Edelman out? Does this change the balance of power in this receiving core?
Well, look, let me counter to you. I don't even know if the Edelman suspension is the biggest thing about this receiving core. They lost 200 receptions just by the departure of Brandon Cooks, who was traded to the Rams, and Danny Amendola going over to the Dolphins. That's 200 targets. Right. Tom Brady last year threw the most attempts of any quarterback in the league, 581, and that's not changing because of age. He was over 400 the year before that, but that was only in 12 games. The other previous full season, he was 600-plus attempts on the year, and they also combined those two for 9 total touchdowns. That's a lot of targets. So when Julian Edelman comes back, as much as I agree with your point that you can end up in the Belichick doghouse, I don't think he can survive without a Julian Edelman. And honestly, the production that you might get over 12 games, I think you could overdraft Edelman in a way if you are seeing him fall, because he is going to miss those four games. But it has to turn your attention to Chris Hogan a lot, I think. Because even if when Edelman comes back, he's the clear number one and with Gronk and those two being 1 and 2, in whichever order, and they still trust the running backs a lot, Chris Hogan is going to get a lot of looks, especially those first 4 weeks when he is going to be the guy in terms of the receiving core, with obviously Edelman being out. But this also then makes Jordan Matthews valuable as well. It just has to be. Whoever's going to win that job, because 200 targets walked out the door with just 2 wide receivers, and there's going to be mouths to feed. So that is it is important to try to find that value, and I would not be scared to overdraft a Chris Hogan or a Julian Edelman.
Yeah, so looking at some ADPs right now for I'm trying to find the ADP for Edelman right now, 37th overall wide receiver I'm seeing on this one site. I don't know if I trust that, but right now I'm with you. I think I'm concerned about what I said regarding the doghouse, I still think I'm okay to take a shot with Edelman. I think those extra 4 games actually help him physically. I'm with you on Hogan is right now the 30th wide receiver off the board. Edelman, I'm trying to find Edelman here. Gosh, I'm having a hard time. 40th here. So Hogan at 30th, Edelman at 40th. Here's what I'll say. I guarantee you in the drafts that I'm in, he's not the 40th wide receiver off the board. I think people are just going to take their shots. They're going to take the bullet of the 4 games, which is a third of your fantasy regular season. and they're happy to do it. So if there's a guy that emerges there as the third wide receiver, Jordan Matthews is curious to me because I find him to be a more talented receiver than his reputation has become in the NFL now on his third team. So I think that could be interesting in the short term, but I don't know that I could trust it long term. Maybe he's a guy I draft late, have him for the first month, and then move on. We'll continue to touch on the Pats a little bit later. I don't think there's anything I need to tell you about Rob Gronkowski. The guy converted 85% of his targets to either a first down or a touchdown in 2017. We'll talk more about the Pats later, but we got the Bills coming up next. Ryan Talbot right after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
On FST. AFC East preview is happening right now. And we're going to welcome in Ryan Talbot here. Ryan Talbot can be found on Twitter at Ryan Talbot Bills. We have him here on occasion. Happy to have him here this morning. Hey, Ryan, how you doing? I hope your summer's going all right.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. So, doing our AFC East previews, you're the guy that we like to talk to about the Bills. Again, you can find him on Twitter at Ryan Talbot Bills. He's a Bills writer for New York Upstate and at Bills Updates, Pro Football Writers Association. So last we talked to you, the Bills, I believe, had just drafted Josh Allen or were about to. I can't remember if we talked right before or right after the draft. So we might as well get things started there. We still have training camp to go through. They obviously have signed A.J. McCarron, but what is the current temperature around Josh Allen and how he's coming along?
You know, he was actually pretty impressive in the spring, and he gave himself a legitimate chance to win the job in week one. There were highs and there were lows, just as you would expect from Josh Allen. He made some incredible throws during the spring that some of the media were able to put right up on social media. You could see the arm strength was apparent. He could, you know, the ball almost whistled out of his hand. But then he did have some bad throws, too, where he threw some poor interceptions or threw some passes that weren't necessarily accurate. But you're going to have to take that with any rookie quarterback, mind you. But Josh Allen, I thought, was pretty impressive in the spring. Nathan Peterman actually was pretty impressive in the spring as well. He added on some muscle onto his frame. I know a lot of people probably aren't giving him much of a shot. The whole Chargers game from last season is probably in their memory, but he looked pretty good out there in Brian Daboll's offense. And A.J. McCarron had his days too in his moments. So going into training camp, I don't think there really is a favorite in terms of who's going to be the week one starter, which makes it that much more interesting.
Let me ask you about if you can get any type of sense of how those quarterbacks are working together, because this is very interesting where you have all three quarterbacks are trying to prove something and trying to establish themselves within this league. Really no veteran there, nothing like a Josh McCown that you have with the Jets. So do you see there being, I mean, obviously there's competition, but does it look like they mesh well together and they kind of lift each other up throughout the practices?
Oh, absolutely. And they're very complimentary towards one another. They talk about how they help one another when they're on the field, off the field. I think that not that A.J. McCarron is that veteran presence like you were just saying, but he's been in that backup role for many years. He's obviously been in the league for a few years. I think that Josh Allen has been able to go to him and pick his brain. I think that Nathan Peterman has been there to answer any questions that he's had. And I think all three of them have kind of worked together to learn this new offense. So in terms of a quarterback room, I think they mesh very well together.
Again, we're with Ryan Talbot. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Talbot Bills, writer for at New York Upstate and at Bills Updates. You can find those on Twitter. So my question and next question, Ryan, is sort of two-pronged because the Bills obviously had three offensive linemen depart during the offseason that brought in some new guys that drafted Wyatt Teller in the fifth round. But it also plays into the fact that LeSean McCoy, as effective as he's been as a Bill, is a year older. Now he's playing against a less experienced offensive line and some might say downgraded offensive line. So is there a legit concern about how the rushing attack bounces back from this and how they're able to protect the quarterback? I know that it kind of all blended together, but I think they're tied hand in hand.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, looking at the running attack first, I think LeSean McCoy is still a guy that you want to get in fantasy leagues. He's going to have a heavy workload. He's going to get 50, 60 receptions. He's going to have no shortage of targets there. But at the same time, I think defenses, first of all, are going to fill the box, stack the box, so to speak, and challenge the Bills to pass with whichever quarterback ends up winning the job. And they're going to have to prove themselves, or else it's going to make life that much more difficult for McCoy in the run game. But in terms of the offensive line, too, they have a lot to prove. You know, last year, going from left to right in the beginning of the season, it was Cordy Glenn, Richie Incognito, Eric Wood right there from, you know, left tackle to center, and all three of them are now gone. Obviously, Deion Dawkins replaced. Cordy Glenn early last season fared very well in the left tackle role, which is one of the reasons why they were the Bills were willing to give up Cordy Glenn, that and his salary. So, you know, I don't look at necessarily Cordy Glenn being replaced because of Dawkins' play last season, but you're still looking at replacing Richie Incognito, who's been one of the best left guards in the league the last few years. And right now the Bills have led to costs playing in that role. He played right guard last year. They're kind of flipping him over there. And I think that the center job is one of the other competitions that's wide open going into training camp, whether it's Russell Bodine or whether it's Ryan Groy who end up winning that job. You know, they have big shoes to fill. Bodine has that experience from his time in Cincinnati, started from his rookie year on, but his play was very uneven in terms of, you know, missing blocks, falling down. You know, I saw some footage of him where he simply was just pushed backwards and he'd fall down to the ground. Ryan Groy played well for Eric Wood in 2016, but really didn't see significant snaps last season. And then even at right guard now, if Vlad DeCoste is over at left guard, you're going to have John Miller as the favorite to win that right guard spot. Miller had a lingering ankle issue last year, which probably put him behind the eight ball in terms of winning that job. That's one of the reasons that DeCoste ended up not only getting the job, but playing the majority of the season there. But his second season in the league, Miller's, he was much improved. So the Bills are probably hoping that he's 100% healthy and that he kind of goes back to what he showed in his second season in the league. So there's a lot of questions there on the offensive line. Will Jordan Mills end up being the right tackle again? Most likely, but they did bring in Marshall Newhouse from the Raiders. So there's competition all across that offensive line.
One thing before Kev, before you ask that question, I would remind everybody that LeSean McCoy did touch the ball 346 times last year. So even a regression, if there were one, would still have him probably well over 300 touches.
To go off.
I agree with that completely.
Yeah. To go off the offensive line stuff, though, because I obviously, even if all of these guys are trying to prove themselves, Josh Allen is the one that they will be focused on. Do you think that they can let outside things, just aside from how they play, dictate when they would give Josh Allen that job? Like, if they look at that offensive line and they say, oh boy, this is going to be tough for whoever the quarterback is, then maybe they would hold Josh Allen back. Or even if you look at the front of their schedule, which looks like it is going to be very difficult those first 8 weeks, do you think that that could prevent them from putting Josh Allen there right away? Or if he looks the best, he gets that job?
Well, you know, I could see both scenarios, so to speak, working out, because they've already said that if he's the best guy for the job at training camp, they're not going to kind of hold him back. They said they have a plan in place for him as well. So if he wows everyone, though, at St. John Fisher, and he is the best quarterback, he will be the week one starter. That said, if it's a close competition and they have questions about their offensive line, or they say, you know, this is a really tough schedule in those first 7-8 games, like you said, do we want to throw this rookie into the fire, so to speak, right off the bat? And maybe they do hold him out and they let the two, I don't even want to call Nathan Peterman an older quarterback because it's only his second year in the league, but maybe let Peterman and McCarron battle it out for that job at the start of the year. And then you put him in if you feel like the season is lost in terms of playoffs, or if you feel like he truly has that good enough grasp on the playbook and that the offensive line has meshed well enough at that point in the season. So I could see both scenarios playing out, but if he is the best quarterback, they're not going to hold him back, and he will be the week one starter.
But if you start calling Ryan Peterman at 24 years old an older quarterback, I'm in big trouble. So for fantasy owners, I think a difficult thing to sift through for this season for this team, since there was such a high volume rushing attack last year and a low volume passing attack, we didn't really get to see much from Zay Jones in his rookie season. Kelvin Benjamin obviously came over midseason. He saw 78 targets. Zay Jones saw 74 targets. So they tried to spread the ball around a little bit, but I don't expect much out of rookie wide receivers anyway. So do you think Zay Jones bounces back here? Who's going to be the higher volume guy? Or are they going to spread it around in a relatively low volume passing attack again?
You know, with Zay Jones, you have to kind of see what he does at training camp. He had off-season knee surgery, so he wasn't there in the spring. He doesn't have any kind of experience with two of the three quarterbacks on this roster. Nathan Peterman, again, is the only quarterback he's actually caught a pass from or seen in action. So he's going to have to get up to speed before I would even say much about him from a fantasy perspective. I think that Kelvin Benjamin obviously is going to see a high volume of targets just because he is their number one wide receiver. He's a big target for these quarterbacks, someone that you can kind of throw it up to and see what happens. If you're in a PPR league and you're looking for someone, not necessarily to draft, but keep an eye on the waiver wire, I think Jeremy Curley could get a lot of targets out of the slot. And I really do think that if he stays healthy, Charles Clay could be in for a big year this year as well. Brian Daboll, obviously the new offensive coordinator, spent many years with New England. He knows the importance of getting the tight end involved. And mind you, Clay is not Rob Gronkowski, but he is a guy that can create separation, that can get open, that has that athleticism. So if he is healthy, he's another guy that I would say could see a high volume of targets.
Ryan, let me go to the defensive side of the ball, because there is talent there. They nailed that Tre'Davious White pick a year ago. Tremaine Edmonds very well could be the steal of the draft. But as you watch them out there in practice and things, does it seem like perhaps there's one guy that could be the key to elevating them to a level where the defense can carry this team throughout the season? Because obviously there's a lot of questions with the offense. But can the defense maybe carry this team to an 8-8 or a 9-7 record?
You know, that's a great question, and I guess I would go with Edmonds in that scenario for picking one guy just because he's going to be the quarterback of the defense at 20 years old. He's going to have to make sure some guys are lined up properly. He's going to be calling out the plays. He's going to have a lot of responsibility, and not only that, but he should rack up a lot of tackles as a rookie, not just because he's the team's starting middle linebacker, but because they also brought in Star Latulele in free agency. And I know, you know, if you look at the analytics from Pro Football Focus and things like that, Latulele has had two poor seasons. But the one area that he is strong at, especially early in his career under Sean McDermott, was in run defense. So they're obviously looking to improve in that regard. And you have Kyle Williams and Latulele up front. And if they can kind of hold their guys, that opens things up for Edmonds in terms of tackling and getting after the running back. Defensive line, they revamped that entire area in terms of, in addition to Latulele, they signed Trent Murphy. And Murphy obviously didn't play last season. He was suspended for 4 games and he had the torn ACL. But the season before that, he recorded quite a few pressures, almost double-digit sacks. And I could see that being a rotation between Trent Murphy and Shaq Lawson, where maybe you have Lawson in on the running downs because that's one area he's been strong in. So if you can keep those two guys fresh, I think that could help the defensive line. And obviously the secondary, they need to stay healthy. But that is one of the most talented groups in the NFL. I mean, like you said, Tre'Davious White had an outstanding rookie season. The safety combination of Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer clicked from day one, and they were outstanding. So, but what they need is they need Vontae Davis to stay healthy. He played in five games last year with the Colts, had a nagging groin injury that cost him the season. Because if they lose Vontae Davis, all of a sudden you look at the depth behind them, and it's kind of questionable, because rookie Taron Johnson is probably going to compete for that nickel cornerback role against Philip Gaines. Then you're talking about guys like Lafayette Pitts, Breon Borders, Levi Wallace, an undrafted free agent, all competing for outside depth. So staying healthy is going to be very important, especially for Davis. He's again at that around that 30-year-old point. And so that's usually when a lot of cornerbacks kind of see a little bit of a decline in their play. So you're hoping that he bounces back from last year and he plays like the Davis of old.
But what you can't see, what I do like about this defense, what you can see is that it's very much a defense built by a general manager and coach that are focused on it very specifically. Obviously, they've addressed the offensive side of the ball in a couple of ways, but what they've done, they're at least starting to do, keep in mind this is only the second year of their regime, they are trying to create a lot of depth. You talked about that defensive line rotation. If you can, and they drafted Harrison Phillips in the third round, and he slipped quite a great deal during the draft. So they're creating a situation where Star Lotulelei maybe doesn't have to play as many snaps and becomes more efficient. And Harrison Phillips, as a rookie, starts getting into that defensive line rotation. The best defensive lines in the league aren't four guys lining up for 70 plays. It's the Giants. The Giants really started to popularize this during their Super Bowl runs, where they had good defensive linemen, but they, more importantly, were rotating six, seven, eight guys into it, making everybody more efficient by playing less snaps.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, Harrison Phillips has already kind of come in, and Kyle Williams has already said, you know, I'm going to mentor this kid because I'm not going to be around here forever. I'm going to do whatever I can to help him be successful in this league. And I think he's going to help Kyle Williams and Star Lotulelei. And even at the other defensive end spot, yeah, Jerry Hughes is going to have the bulk of the snaps there. But one guy that was impressive in the spring and obviously has to carry it over to training camp was Owo Digizua, former third-round pick for the Giants, as we were just kind of speaking about them. Kind of flamed out early in his career, but he says he has something to prove now. He probably knows it's his last chance in the league. But he was really impressive in the spring, and he's a guy that you might see end up getting in the rotation. Last year, Eddie Yarborough was another guy who impressed in training camp and the preseason. So they do have some depth there, and that could make that defensive line pretty solid from one season ago.
Yeah, I mean, it always seems to work out for the Patriots as far as schedule or whatever, because they got the Vikings and the Packers at home, but the Bills are going to be at Baltimore, at Minnesota, and at Green Bay in those first 4 weeks, plus the Chargers, a team that people really like to win their division. That's a tough month to start. September is going to be rough on the Bills.
Oh, absolutely. And if they can come out and somehow even split that somehow, I think people would be pretty high on the Bills at that point, just because that is a tough start to the year.
Great stuff. That's Ryan Talbot. Again, he's a Bills writer for nyup.com is where you can go to find those. Find him on Twitter at Ryan Talbot Bills. Ryan, great to talk to you. I'm sure we'll catch up with you again before the season starts.
Sounds great, guys. Have a good day.
All right, we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about those Bills right after this.